one in five Americans are struggling with a mental health disorder, 20% of us.
Wow.
So if we had just three more people on the screen in front of us, one of us would be struggling. That's a phenomenal statistic. And actually, it's more than people suffering from heart disease and diabetes and blood pressure.
Welcome to the Real Security Podcast, where we talk about real security issues with real security experts to help you protect yourself and your family with real security solutions. I'm Tiffany with the Lionheart Security Team, and today's podcast is all about helping to prepare you and your family for the rapidly changing security climate in our nation. Let's join our host, Tim Miller, as we talk about today's critical topic.
Hey, welcome to Real Security. And again, I'm Tim Miller, your host. And wow, am I excited about today's topic and guest. For those of you who know anything about me, you know that I am all about, dealing and helping people that are struggling with mental illness issues. And I got to tell you, we have one of the best people in the country, I think the best personally after talking to her, to weigh in on this topic today. Dr. Alexandra Tseng is an incredible person, obviously, highly experienced. And I'm going to let her tell you a little bit about herself, but I'm just so honored to have her here because, mental health is a challenge across our nation. Everybody's talking about COVID. I got to tell you, I'm way more concerned about mental illness in the U.S. and the long-term impact. I mean, every time I read a study, it's about the mental health impact to COVID or the mental health impact to a variety of different people groups in the U.S. and how all of them point drastically up. So, Dr. Tseng, I'm going to call you Alex, if that's okay. It's such an honor to have you here today. And can you just really briefly tell everybody a little bit about, I realize you could go on and on because you're one of the most experienced people I've ever met, but tell everybody about yourself.
Just briefly, I'm Dr. Alex Tseng, and thank you so much for having me. I am a clinical forensic psychologist. I've been a psychologist for about 25 years. So my specialty is all the disorders, all the clinical disorders that exist. But I have been working in the forensic field with people who commit crimes and law enforcement and that aspect of psychology for about 23 years. So most of my area that I practice in includes violence, suicide, chronic, severe mental health disorders, anything that has to do with police training and just recidivism and the criminal mind, just in a very, very basic nutshell.
Well, and I was introduced to you through a dear, dear friend of mine from the FBI who had a background in behavioral sciences, and he told me that you're his hero. So that really makes you my hero by
default. My hero, and you're my hero.
Well, thank you for joining us today. I really mean that. I know you're exceptionally busy. And, as I've kind of delved into more and more, obviously our company does some training with mental health awareness based on my background with protective intelligence and the Secret Service, but more importantly with NAMI and some of the great work they're doing in the crisis intervention training program. And I was really excited to get you to come on and talk to us because it seems like mental illness is everywhere. Now, we tend to see a violent incident. Oh, that person was mentally ill, but it's way broader than that. And I'd like for us to take a quick look at, kind of what we're seeing across the country, because it's not just the normal levels of mental illness and suicide limited to homeless or that's what you hear a lot. It really is kind of about everybody. So let's take a look at this together.
A former Miss USA, Chesley Crist, is reigniting the conversation around mental health. Crist died by suicide over the weekend in New York City. She was 30 years old.
Many are now asking what can be done and what's the proper way to check in on someone's mental health.
News 8's Whitney Burney joins us now live in the newsroom with the advice from mental health advocates.
Well, Brian and Sue, the staff at the West Michigan Mental Health Foundation say it really comes down to paying close attention to changed behaviors and consistently having conversations. They say more people than we realize are struggling with their mental health. After the death of Miss USA 2019, Chesley Chris sent shockwaves through many. The conversation on mental health and suicide is back at the forefront.
It's an end result to an illness that possibly went untreated. Oftentimes, people who die by suicide, people think that they are selfish, which in fact is not the truth. That person who is contemplating or attempts or does die by suicide was in a lot of pain.
Christy Buck with the West Michigan Mental Health Foundation says current statistics show 1 in 5 adults will struggle with mental health in any given year.
That's amazing.
Anybody could really be at risk. That is where awareness and education comes into play.
Knowing the signs can save a life. Is this person more tired than usual? Changes in their weight? Isolating themselves more? Buck says it's not just about being nice, but also about intervening and being persistent when checking on friends and family members.
If I'm reaching out to my friends and I'm asking, you know, how are you? And they say I'm fine, but really they're struggling. Yeah. How do you combat that particular stop there?
I've noticed changes in this person's behavior. So that's how you start the conversation with someone. Well, what I've noticed recently is you're typically the person that always makes coffee first thing in the morning when we come to work. And what I've noticed is you come into work and you go right into your office.
Buck says shaking off the shame around suicide will also help prevent future deaths.
For family members that lose someone by suicide, a lot of that goes back to what did I do wrong? What did I miss? That embarrassment, the shame that I didn't know this. With an individual who is not seeking help and treatment, a lot of that shame is the embarrassment that goes, I'm letting people down. I'm not a strong enough man. I'm not a good enough coworker. I'm not a good employee. I'm a terrible mom. I mean, there are so many things that are going on in someone's mind when they are struggling with this illness called depression.
You know, Alex, every time I watch these clips, it really brings home in my mind. Unfortunately, I've lost a couple agent friends who, I don't think anybody saw it coming. Mm-hmm. And I know you do such phenomenal work helping law enforcement folks come to grips with some of their mental health issues. If you could just explain to me kind of what's happening with the mental health crisis in our country.
Well, there is a mental health crisis, first of all. Hmm. You know, when the COVID especially initially hit, the mental health community predicted at that point in time that there's going to be a second pandemic, and that's the mental health pandemic.
Wow.
Back a couple of years ago, we were already talking about it. Pre-COVID, at any given time, and that video was accurate, pre-COVID, the statistics are at any given time, 1 in 5 Americans are struggling with a mental health disorder, 20% of us.
Wow.
So if we had just 3 more people on the screen in front of us, one of us would be struggling. That's a phenomenal statistic. And actually, it's more than people suffering from heart disease and diabetes and blood pressure. Yes.
Wow.
So as a psychologist, it's like, why are we not talking about it? We are so open in talking about, you know, medical ailments. We don't treat mental health with that same, you know, parity. And part of that is the stigma. But when COVID hit, and it was hard, it was an unusual situation, right? It was a historical kind of a one-off. We were not prepared to deal with it.
Yeah.
And what has happened is when people who were already doing pretty well, once COVID hit, you know, everyone took a step down. Now they were doing a little less well. And people who were doing already kind of maybe struggling, now maybe were having, you know, more severe issues.
Is that because they were isolated during COVID?
That was isolated, just kind of the, you know, barriers to resources. People were not able to do the hobbies that maybe, you know, go to the gym to exercise, which is
that's a great point.
Depression and everything. And we were just not equipped. But I'm not just like, you know, blaming this on COVID or anything. I think the 1 in 5 statistic has existed prior to COVID. And I think, you know, that is a staggering statistic. And part of it is with that statistic, half of those people, at least half, I believe it's 63%, are not being treated.
My
so
goodness.
1 in 5 are suffering from, you know, depression is probably one of the most common disorders.
Right.
But usually it doesn't come in isolation. When you have depression, sometimes you have alcohol abuse. Sometimes there's anxiety included, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like an umbrella package deal for people. It's not the, not just that they're solely depressed. They could have other, you know, traits of other disorders too, depending on what's going on in their life and their genetic predisposition. But a lot of people are not being treated for that. And those are the people I worry about.
Let me ask you, Dr. Tsang, if I can. This is scary. You're the first person that said, hey, it's the second pandemic. And as I understand your discussion, it's not a pandemic like COVID that's probably going to pass away over time. This is going to likely get worse. I heard some data regarding children and teens.
Yes. What,
talk to me about the impact of this new pandemic called mental illness on our kids.
Kids have been hit, especially teenagers, very hard. Very hard for multiple reasons. First of all, let's take the teenage group. Developmentally, they don't yet have as good of coping resources as adults, right? They're still learning how to cope. Then developmentally, look at all the milestones that happen, especially with COVID. You had proms and graduations, and all of a sudden, you know, you look forward to your graduation and college visits, and that was kind of taken away. But teenagers are vulnerable for that reason, and their brain development. I mean, the brain has been shown to develop all the way up to age 25.
Wow.
So the brain is not matured yet. And we're talking about the frontal lobe.
Yeah.
The part of the brain that's really responsible for abstract reasoning, good judgment, impulse control. Well, you take a teenager who's maybe vulnerable already, you add some adverse life experiences when they don't have the coping skills to deal with it, and maybe they don't have a family or parent support to help them navigate through not just the normative teenage years, but now add adverse events. And these are the kids that are more susceptible to, you know, being at risk and impulsive. And I worry about those kids in terms of, you know, linking it to suicide.
Wow.
Especially suicidal
That's
behavior.
Profound. Yeah. I mean, you know, what blew me away is Miss USA. We started this conversation.
With Miss USA.
What, and, you know, it's interesting. I saw some interviews about her. Chelsea was a wonderful person. Everybody said she walked into the office. She lit the place up. She was genuinely caring, genuinely compassionate. And yet she jumped out of a building and took her life. I think it just kind of was a wake up. Boy, this is not limited to any socioeconomic group.
Absolutely. And when and we all get very surprised when we see a celebrity.
Right.
Suicide, correct? Like,
right.
you know, years ago, we have Robin Williams, we have Kate Spade, we have all of these, because in our heads, you know, what we consider good mood, first of all, you know, there's misinformation there. You know, a lot of people think if only I won the lottery, you know, then I'd have money, then I'd have security, I'd be so much happier.
Yeah.
Well, look at these celebrities. They did have the fame. They had the money. They had adulation of the entire, you know, America. So what does that mean? Because depression and mental health disorders are biochemical changes. They are disorders. It doesn't matter how much money you have. Yeah. It's not a situational mood state. So people think it's a situational mood state, and it isn't. You could be suffering inside, putting on a mask of smiling. And I think that's when people say, oh, I never saw it coming. A lot of things with suicide, though, is most people who have suicidal thoughts actually do not want to die.
Wow.
And it's not necessarily the depression that causes the suicide. You know what it is?
Mm-mm.
Hopelessness.
Oh, wow.
It's the hopelessness.
Wow, that's deep.
That's linked with the depression. Hopelessness mm-hmm. is a symptom of depression, but it's not that people necessarily want to die. They just don't want to have the life and the problems that they have, and they don't see a way out of it. They don't see a future
so good.
Without yeah. those problems.
That's so good. And I think for me, you know, Dr. Singh, the biggest thing is what impact can I have on people that are hopeless? I'd be interested in your professional thoughts on, you know, what are things we can do just to care for people? I know, you know, and you, I know you're much younger than I am, but I can remember a day when mental health issues were like, no, Absolutely. They're crazy. Leave me away. And I love what you said earlier regarding removing the stigma. And I think people just have to care, but I'd be interested in your thoughts. What are some tangible things we can do? Because if your numbers are right, and it's 1 in 5,
20%.
There are, mm-hmm. yeah, if they're 300 million, I'm not a math guy, but you know, 330 million in the U.S., that means that you likely are crossing paths with someone that is significantly struggling with mental illness every day.
You absolutely are. And you may not see it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had asked what we can do. There's global things we can do and then specific to the situation. Globally, mm-hmm. I really am such a proponent on just erasing the stigma. Let's yeah. treat mental health like the other disorders. You know, you go to the doctor when you have high blood pressure. You know, there's no shame in that. Why are we shaming
right.
someone for bio? We have proven
That's right.
that there's biochemical changes. People with schizophrenia, if you do an MRI, you see that the brain structures are different. We have tangible
wow.
proof that this is an illness. It's not
wow.
a matter of choice or whatever. So first
yeah.
of all, watch our language. Do not refer to people as crazy or loony or insane. I mean, pay attention to how society labels the mentally ill.
And
that
really
makes it very difficult for the mentally ill to come forward and treat and get treatment. They don't want to be labeled as crazy or as less capable as other people. You could be mentally ill, and if you're treated, you could not only be productive, you could thrive in society. Thrive.
That's golden. I hope everybody that listens to this hears this, because that is exactly correct. It's been my experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially in the Secret Service, a lot of folks that we were dealing with had severe mental health issues if they were targeting or focusing on the president. And it's interesting because it literally was just, I've seen folks that you deal with one way on one day and they get into the right treatment programs and medication
yes.
protocols and all that. And you see them later and it's like, who are you? You're not even
exactly.
the same person.
Exactly.
With that said, speak to me about the families that are suffering because they have someone, you know, that has bipolar or schizophrenia. What words of wisdom and encouragement would you give them?
Well, first of all, don't give up. There are certain disorders with bipolar, for example, and schizophrenia, especially. There's a clinical, I hate sounding fancy. There's a word, anosognosia, and you're like, who, Anna, who? that means inherent in the disorder is a lack of insight that you are mentally ill. So
wow.
you talk to someone who's psychotic and delusional, they don't realize they're psychotic and delusional. They think something's wrong with you.
Yeah.
Right? Let's say
yeah,
someone
that's
who's
right.
paranoid. You can't convince a paranoid person you're not out to get them.
Yeah. Or
like, you're just saying that. Now I mistrust you even more.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
People that don't have the awareness that they're mentally ill are not going to pick up the phone to make an appointment with a psychologist or with a psychiatrist for medicine. They're not going to seek help. This
wow,
is where the
good.
Family comes in. The family knows they're mentally ill. I love, you know, NAMI, National Alliance for Mentally Ill. Great organization. That's really, you know, anyone out there who's listening right now who has someone, a friend or family that's mentally ill, and you need resources, you need the support, you need psychoeducation, you need help, you need maybe, you know, there's legal things in terms of care. You are not alone. There are organizations that exist to help you and to help your loved one. There's plenty of resources around, including the, you know, medication. Actually, mental illness is actually very treatable.
Wow.
The rates for bipolar, if they take it, are more treatable than for like heart disease and everything.
Wow.
It's a myth. It is a myth. And I want to dispel myths out there, because it's part of the education, that once you're mentally ill, like, you know, all's lost. You might as well just give up. Your life is going to go down the tube and there's nothing to do. That is absolutely, absolutely wrong. Antipsychotics for schizophrenia work wonders. Wonders. So there's hope out there, and there's help out there.
Now, I got to ask you, since you're the expert, is there really cool breakthrough? Are there breakthroughs in the horizon on mental health treatment protocols, all that kind of stuff that you're aware of?
There are some emerging treatments. First of all, there's kind of treatments focused on different disorders, personality disorders. But one that I'm very excited about, that I'm about to undergo training for, is trauma treatment. That could be used for vets, anyone for trauma. It's called EMDR, which is an eye movement desensitization, a type of reprocessing, where you're actually reprocessing the brain to sever the connections between the traumatic memories that may, you know, think of PTSD, right? And I know you're very familiar with that and whatever, that hypervigilance or that startle reflex. You hear a firecracker